he's available.
Mr. Chair, we'll need to consider this separately, but there's two in a row that are similar.
But they both want it.
Right.
So I need to confirm who 2511 is.
On Skype here, and the pronunciation is Boyce, B-O-I-C-E.
Boyce, all right, so I apologize, sir. Very good. Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
16.
As I said earlier, my name is Nate Sosa, I'm chair of the Ethics Commission. And so this is our opportunity to look at the preliminary review of your case and to determine whether or not we're going to move forward with the investigation.
So Chair, can I interrupt you? I'm sorry.
Yes.
We have a number calling in that's at 454-2511, and we'd like to know who that is before we start executive session or this case. Who's on the line that ends in 2511 number? Okay, well let's just go ahead and take them out of the meeting then. All right, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Okay, thank you.
Very good, thank you. All right, so we're going to begin with a staff report on this matter, and we may have some questions for staff. After that, sir, you'll have an opportunity to add anything you'd like to say, and then we will move forward with deciding whether or not to proceed on with the full investigation. So staff report, please.
Thank you, Chair Sosa, Commissioners. Item 16 is a preliminary review report for Chris Boyce, a Douglas County Commissioner. The complaint in this matter alleged that Commissioner Boyce violated ethics laws by using the discounts or fleet pricing in the county's contract with Texaco Service for his personal vehicle. The complainant explained that he was told this by the station's former owner, who is now deceased, and by its former manager. With his response, Commissioner Boyce provided a written statement from that former manager, Michael Roberts, stating that Commissioner Boyce has never received such fleet pricing. The current station manager, Jake Antonin, and the bookkeeper, Tina, also affirmed this. The complainant also provided a public price list that included a type statement that the discounts in the contract were offered to commissioners but not the general public. This price list was signed by the current station manager, but he told commission staff he had not seen this statement when he signed the paper provided by the complainant. Based on the information available in the preliminary review, there does not appear to be a substantial objective basis believes that Commissioner Boyce violated ethics laws. The report that is in your meeting books recommends dismissal.
All right, thank you, Ms. Myers. Appreciate that. Do any commissioners have any questions for staff? All right, hearing none. Mr. Boyce, is there anything you'd like to add?
Just a couple things real quick. First, thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here and be a part of the proceeding. And obviously I'm pleased with the outcome of the preliminary review and would urge the commission to follow the recommendation. But a couple things that just procedurally that I wanted to mention. I don't know if any of you have ever been an elected official before, but the process that you use, although very thorough, is flawed in a few ways from our perspective. And what I mean by that is, you know, these documents have been emailed back and forth to us. Our emails are subject to public meetings laws. Folks often submit public meetings or public information requests to get information like this just to use against us. Whether or not we're found to be guilty or innocent, if we're being investigated in any way, a lot of times the public will take that as a guilty verdict before the matter is ever even heard. And that's just one of the frustrating things that we deal with as elected officials. And on the other side of this, reading the review, there's one sentence in here that sort of points out the frustration that I've had with this process. It says, should the commission move this matter to investigation, however, commission staff would obtain Commissioner Boyce's official compensation package and determine whether it authorizes the extension of him of the county's discounted prices, etc. And what I mean by that is, in this entire complaint, the person who filed the complaint has not in any way demonstrated that I have ever even been to Chuck's Texaco. The only proof that you guys have that I've even been there in any vehicle is that I've offered that information for myself to say that I have used Chuck on a few occasions on my personal vehicles to have my vehicles washed. The point being that it seems sort of irrelevant to dig into that further when there hasn't been any evidence provided by this complainant that what he's alleging to be true actually even happened. So with no burden of proof, it's frustrating that we all have to waste our time on this. However, I understand the complexity of it and you guys doing your part, and I'm grateful for that. The second thing in the last paragraph, it says, based on the information available in this preliminary review, there's not appear to be a substantial objective basis. The fact is there is no basis. It doesn't just not appear to be. There has, again, been no evidence, not one invoice, not one copy of a receipt provided by anybody suggesting that what this guy's alleging even happened. And the reason that's true is because it didn't happen. So I appreciate your time. That's really all I have, unless you have any questions for me. And thanks again.
Mr. Boyce, thank you so much. We really do appreciate you being here and sharing that with us. Do any commissioners have any questions, Mr. Boyce? All right. Hearing none, then we will move into deliberations. Do any commissioners have anything they'd like to discuss or any motions they'd like to make?
Mr. Chair, this is Commissioner Fiskum. If there's discussion, I'll recede for a moment, but save for that, I would move that the commission adopt the staff recommendation to dismiss the complaint involving Mr. Chris Boyce, item number 16 on the executive session agenda for December 18th.
Thank you, Commissioner Fiskum. So we do have a pending motion to dismiss the matter. Any discussion on the motion?
On the motion, no. This is Sean Lindsay speaking.
Yes.
On the motion, no. But I do think it's a valid point to follow up on some of Mr. Boyce's comments, especially the process of communication. So I'd just like to make note that I would be interested in understanding or maybe revisiting that a little bit further at some point.
Thank you, Commissioner Lindsay. And I know that is something that we have, as a commission, have struggled with in the past, where you have folks who file politically motivated complaints that may not have any merit to them, but, and then unfortunately the court public official is having to deal with that, and sometimes the media takes it and runs with it. So, that has definitely been something we've been cognizant of in the past and have had to deal with in other cases.
Mr. Chair, if I might.
Yes, Commissioner Day.
Thank you. Yeah, this is an issue, you noted, we see this from time to time. It really, the policy decision rests with the legislature on whether they want to exempt these types of records from public disclosure. It doesn't, unfortunately, it's an issue that's beyond the control of our commission.
Thank you, Commissioner Day. So, okay. Well, unless there's any further discussion, roll call vote in regards to the motion to dismiss.
Commissioner Mason?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sartoon?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr? I believe he's not on.
No.
Okay, he's absent at this point. Commissioner Edwards? Commissioner Edwards?
She's on.
She might be on mute. Doesn't show that she is.
Should we just move on?
Should move on.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollister?
Aye.
Commissioner Lindsay?
Aye. Chair Sosa?
Aye.
Motion passes 7-0.
All right, Ms. Boyce, this matter has been dismissed. Thank you very much for joining us.
Sosa.
The next one's waiting, yes. Is that what your question was? Yeah. Right, now we go to that.
Which one?
For Freeman. Freeman? Yeah.
And they are in.
Nice. Okay. Ms. Freeman, do we have you with us?
Good morning, this is Tim.
Yes, good morning, Tim. My name is Nathan Sosa, and I'm chair of the Oregon Government Ethics Commission. So this is the time for us to hear your matter. So just to give you a sense of how this is going to go, we're going to begin with a staff report, and we may have some questions for staff, and then we will turn it over to you to add anything you would like to say. And then at that point, the commissioners will discuss amongst themselves how to proceed with your case. But I do want to emphasize that what we'll be deciding is not whether there's been a violation, but simply whether to move the case to a full investigation. Okay?
Great. Can you see and hear me okay?
We can hear you fine. I don't see you, but your audio is coming through clear.
Oh, there he is.
Oh, there we are. Okay, very good. All right, so let's begin with staff report, please.
Thank you. Chair Sosa, commissioners. Item 17 is a preliminary review report for Tim Freeman, Douglas County Commissioner. The complaint in this matter originally alleged that Commissioner Freeman used the fleet pricing in the county's contract with Texaco Service for his personal vehicle. Commissioner Freeman denied ever bringing his vehicle to Chuck's, and Commission staff received a statement from the former manager stating he had never brought his vehicle to the station. In a subsequent telephone call with the complainant, he stated that he didn't actually know whether Commissioner Freeman received fleet pricing or not. The complaint also included somewhat vague allegations concerning Commissioner Freeman's travel mileage reimbursements by the county. The complainant stated that Commissioner Freeman submits for travel reimbursement monthly. However, there's no information in the complaint to indicate that such reimbursements are unauthorized or could violate ethics laws. Based on the information available in preliminary review, there does not appear to be a substantial objective basis to believe that Commissioner Boyce violated Oregon government ethics laws. I mean, Commissioner Freeman, sorry.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Myers. Any questions for staff? Okay. Hearing none. Mr. Freeman, is there anything you'd like to add?
I would. Thank you. And thank you to the commission for giving me a few minutes. Commissioner Boyce and I often get mistaken. The way to tell us apart is I have more hair. I have been an elected official here at different levels of government in Oregon for a little over 17 years, and have had a very good opinion of the Oregon Ethics Commission and the work that they do on behalf of elected officials, and I have recommended many elected officials to call the Ethics Commission for advice, and I will tell you this experience has sort of damaged that opinion, and I hope hopefully I can get over that and get things back squared away. So there's two specific things I want to bring up and hopefully can get cleared up. So first is the statement where it says does not appear to be. That is a gravely misstatement. You guys did an investigation. Every single avenue except the complaint, you were told this didn't happen. This is going to be a public document we're done, and it should read, the evidence showed Commissioner Freeman did not. And so it doesn't be used as a political tool in the future against me. So again, I know in your world that might mean the same thing, but it means completely different things to the public than the response of this there does not appear to be leaves doubt in people's mind when there's literally no evidence and there's evidence contrary to this ever occurring. The second challenge I have is this vague allegation comment. The complainant never alleged that I did anything wrong getting vehicle reimbursement mileage. Therefore, I did not submit any sort of a response to that allegation because there was no allegation. So somehow the commission investigator established that there was a vague allegation, and now it's in the report as if there was something wrong, and nothing's been investigated on. We at the county used to have county vehicles. The Board of Commissioners now drive their own vehicles. Using four work issues, that month I went back and looked at the reimbursement. It was for test clinics, for COVID response, where I carried equipment and supplies to clinics. I carried personal protection equipment to fire department, police departments, and hospitals, and supplies to public health. I also responded to a fire that Douglas Forest Protection Association responded to. I'm on their board of directors. I'd like to have that part completely stricken from the record, because the fact is, it wasn't part of the complaint. Again, this leaves lots of doubt in people's mind that maybe I had done something wrong, when in fact this person that complained, as I told the original investigator, is a political adversary that doesn't like the decisions the board's making, and I would hate for him to use your commission to forward that cause. Again, thank you for the work you all do. I sure appreciate it, and appreciate this time.
Thank you, Mr. Freeman. We really appreciate you joining us. And we are always struggled in the past when folks file politically motivated complaints and having to investigate those. And while ultimately it is dismissed, you know, as you say, sometimes the media takes it and you run with it. So we've been keenly aware of that in years past, and it is something that we continue to struggle with. So, okay. Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Freeman?
Chair?
Yes.
Oh, I was just checking my audio. Thank you.
Okay, very good. All right, any questions, Ms. Green? Okay. Hearing none, then we will move.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Trish O'Day.
Yeah, thank you. So, not so much a question for the commissioner, but really one for staff. But before I do, Commissioner, I completely understand where you're coming from. You know, whether the degree of public disclosure of these proceedings and these documents is I said in a previous matter, really is a legislative decision. It's not really up to this commission. You know, we conduct our proceedings in accordance with the statutes as the legislature adopts them. But that being said, Mr. Chair, could we have staff perhaps respond to both the allegation of the mileage, how that came to be, the commission's role in investigating that, as well as the word choice that is used in these reports, particularly this phase of a proceeding.
Yes, thank you, Commissioner.
You want to talk about the mileage? Yeah. I want to talk about the words.
Yes, the allegation about mileage with his complaint, the complainant, Mr. Geddes, provided a printout listing and highlighted Douglas County expenditures for travel mileage reimbursement. And he provided a one-month statement where Commissioner Freeman received travel mileage reimbursement for $714. And in his telephone call with commission staff, he reiterated that Commissioner Freeman was receiving these reimbursements monthly and that he believed that it was improper. As I indicated in the report, I did not believe there was sufficient information there to merit further investigation. But I did believe the complainant did make it clear to me that he was asserting Commissioner Freeman was receiving improper reimbursement.
And Commissioner O'Day, just on that wording, especially the last paragraph there, where it talks about it does not appear, you folks realize that the commission staff here, we do not find violations, and we also do not dismiss violations. That is what the commission is for. It takes five votes of the commission to either move something forward, whether that be a dismissal or whatever. So our language is never going to be absolute, because frankly that would take away your folks' ability to disagree with us. And as you know, now in this case you may not disagree with us, but you have disagreed with the staff on their recommendations in the past. And so that is why the language maybe seems a little less pointed or a little less, absolute. And that's because, when you talk about authority, the commission staff here does not have the authority to dismiss or move a complaint forward. So I understand Commissioner Freeman's frustration with that, but I hope that Commissioner Freeman takes solace in that it's the actual vote that is coming up. It is the determination of the commission that we have recommended that there is not a violation. We have recommended dismiss this violation. If the commission agrees with that, that is the absolute point. And that is, so if some person from the media actually did contact me to ask what happens with Commissioner Freeman's case, it's like the commission voted whatever it is to dismiss. So that's where kind of the absolute comes in. So the staff just does not write kind of in absolute terms, black or white terms. So anyway.
Thank you very much, Bruce, and I appreciate the explanation. It's the one I had expected.
Thank you.
Mr. Freeman, did you want to say something?
Just very briefly, and thank you for that explanation. However, what you just said was not what the paper says. You said there wasn't a violation. The paper says there doesn't appear to be. So those are different things. Again, it easily could say there's not evidence that shows, or the evidence didn't show, but instead it says it does not appear to be. So I know that seems very close to the same thing to you all. I will tell you, having been in many campaigns across the state of Oregon, there's a huge difference in those two statements. So again, thank you, and I appreciate you hearing me out on that. And if I would have known there was a complaint about the mileage, I would have submitted a response to that. So that's really not fair that Mr. Gaddis over the phone made a complaint, and I was never made aware of it. And I would have been happy to submit all the information about what we've done here and what those mileage were for. So again, thank you. We've spent plenty of time on this. I know you have a long agenda.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. Chair, this is Commissioner Fiskin. When you're ready, I have a motion.
Go ahead, sir.
First of all, just a quick preamble on Mr. Freeman. It's good to see you after some years. Welcome to the Ethics Commission. That said, I will move that the commission endorse the staff recommendation to dismiss the complaint involving Mr. Tim Freeman, item number 17, on our December 18th executive session agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Fiskin. So moved. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Lindsay?
Aye.
Commissioner Mason?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sartoon?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Absent. I think he's still alive.
No, he's there.
Yeah. Okay.
He's on mute.
Oh. We'll go by. Commissioner Edwards?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollister?
I saw her say aye.
Okay.
She said aye.
She's on mute.
Aye.
There you go.
Okay. Thank you.
Is Commissioner Starr still
He's
muted?
He's still on mute, yes.
Can you unmute him?
I can try to do that, but I'm not.
Go try ahead. Now.
Commissioner Starr?
He's speaking.
Okay, well, it's, I'm sorry, you have 8-0.
It's done anyway.
Motion passes 8-0.
There he is.
There he is.
So, and now we can see
him. I
see
him. Okay. So, 9-0. Get the record straight. 9-0. Okay.
Very good. All right. You just took a picture of that.
Thank you all, and Merry Christmas.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Freeman. Have a good day. All right. So next, we're going to be moving on to item 23, Carol Harlan. Do you have her anything?
Yes. Just one moment here.
I've not even looked in now.
She should be connected.
He needs to turn his camera around, but he's got it.
Commissioner Starr, we can hear you, but your video feed looks like it's turned around a bit.
You can hear me now?
Yeah.
I can hear you now. That's good enough.
Well, I want just a picture of it. Of the Christmas decoration here.
Looks very festive.
Yes.
They look very nice.
Yeah. I like them better.
There you go.
Okay, so do you have your guest in?
She's in.
All right.
That's okay.
So the guest is in.
All right. So do we have Carol Harlan with us?
Yes.
I'm here.
Very good. Good morning, Ms. Harlan. My name is Nathan Sosa, and I'm chair of the Oregon Government Ethics Commission. This is the time for us to hear your matter, so just so you know how this is going to proceed, we're going to begin with a staff report, and we may have some questions for the investigator. After that, we're going to give you an opportunity to say anything you would like to add, and we may have some questions for you. And then we're going to be deliberating amongst ourselves about whether or not to move to full investigation. So I just want to emphasize that we're not making a determination today of whether there's been any sort of violation, but merely whether to move the case on to the next stage, which is that full investigation. Okay?
Okay.
Very good. Staff report, please.
Chair Sosa, commissioners. Item 23 is a preliminary review report for Carol Harlan, a member of the Board of Directors for the Sheridan Fire District. In October, the four district board members, including Ms. Harlan, held two special meetings to interview applicants for a vacant position on the board. Among the applicants were the complainant and a Mr. Parrish Van Wert. Mr. Van Wert is Ms. Harlan's fiancé and is a member of her household. Following the interviews, the board voted on three of the four candidates, including Mr. Van Wert, but could not reach a consensus and all of the votes failed. Subsequently, the board moved to send the applications to the Yamhill County Board of Commissioners for them to make the appointment. On November 5th, the Board of Commissioners voted unanimously to appoint Parrish Van Wert to the vacancy. A provision in Oregon's nepotism statutes directs that relatives or household members may simultaneously serve on a governing body, but a separate provision says that the public official may not participate in the appointment process for their relative or household member to the governing body they serve. In this case, while the actual appointment of Mr. Van Wert was made by the Board of Commissioners, the issue is whether Ms. Harlan violated 244-177 when she participated in the board's interview and vote for her fiancé's appointment in October. Ms. Harlan explained, both at the time in the board meetings and to us, that she had called the commission before proceeding. Commission staff, me in particular, does recall speaking with someone about whether having relatives serving on the same board creates a conflict of interest and stating that it does not. We do not recall whether this was Ms. Harlan, but it may have been, and we don't recall whether the issue of participating in the appointment process was raised. In your reports, we point out that ORS 244.284 provides that before imposing penalties, a commission may consider whether a public official was acting in reliance on written or oral advice from commission staff. In this case, it does appear that Ms. Harlan sought our advice and may have received perhaps incomplete advice based on the information provided. The report in your meeting books recommends investigation based on what appears to be a technical violation of the statute.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Marnus. Do any commissioners have any questions for the investigator? Yes, Commissioner Day.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For staff, it was just an audio thing. I couldn't quite hear. Was this, were the interviews conducted in executive session or open meeting?
They were in open meeting.
Okay. Thank you very much.
That was
my only, but I was wondering if perhaps we had two potential violations here. So thank you.
Commissioner Hollister.
Thank you, Jim. So just a question about commission practice. So where we say here on page 6, staff does not recall being asked or providing advice specifically on whether it would violate the nepotism statutes. I'm just wondering what sorts of records we keep of those consultations. Thank you.
No, I'll go ahead and answer that. So, obviously, phone calls don't create a record, but what we do is we encourage people to provide their questions to us in writing through email or something like that, and then we respond back in writing. So, but there are telephone conversations that we do have here at the commission, and people say don't actually do that, actually don't send an email in. But for the most part, we really try to encourage people to give us something in writing. It's hard for us to provide something in writing to them over a telephone conversation because we may not remember everything correctly, so that's why we try to get them to document that. But in this case, it sounds like it was just a telephone call. You know, quite frankly, we have a recommendation to move this case forward, but, you know, Susan and I talked about this. You know, we probably should have expanded our advice to Ms. Harlan at the time about the appointment of a relative or member of household onto basically a non-paying position, that, you know, there are these problems. They can be on that, but you need to withdraw yourself from appointing. The other thing I really want to point out, too, is in the end, this board, I guess it's a board, yeah, board of directors, did not actually do the appointing. It was the county commissioners that, yeah, did the appointing because they couldn't do it. Ms. Harlan simply voted in those amount of votes that didn't add up to enough I votes to make it happen. So we recommended moving this forward on basically a technical violation, but quite frankly, in the end, we would probably, if we found something, we would probably look at a letter of education. And I think that not only has Ms. Harlan been educated, but we also have been educated here to make sure that we, in those telephone conversations, we try to expand it out and make sure that people kind of know the whole breadth of the law and not just one specific point. So I know what my recommendation is there, but it's just a technical one. I really think that, in all fairness to Ms. Harlan, my opinion is this one should be dismissed. So.
Thank you, Director Burson. I just want to express my total understanding of the challenges of providing oral advice over the phone. So, thank you for that additional information and for sharing your perspective.
Thank you, Chris Hollister. Chris Rade.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Executive Director Burson, thank you for that explanation. As you know, I once upon a time would steer elected officials your direction on these sorts of matters, and this is a recurring issue, I can tell you, from my time as the General Counsel of the League of Oregon Cities. Often, an elected official will call and say, is it a conflict if my spouse serves on the board or on the city council with me? Of course, you know, as you've noted, staff report notes, you know, that status alone does not create a conflict, but the statutes have this buried little provision in it that a lot of people are not aware of, that you cannot vote on the appointment of your spouse or a member of your household. So I would always, you know, make a point of underscoring that as well, because you don't necessarily know what facts, and people aren't always thinking in terms of that when they call in for such advice. So I really do appreciate your perspective on this, and also staff support of a dismissal here, because ultimately I would see this would probably end up as a letter of education. And our respondent here, of course, is on the phone, and she's getting educated, I'm sure, based on this conversation we're having. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Day.
Mr. Chair, this is Commissioner Fiskum.
Yes, Commissioner Fiskum.
I think I know the answer to this question, but I do not believe the commission has the authority to send, on the basis of the work done so far, a letter of education as part of the process. Now, we would have to wait until the investigation before achieving that objective. I think I'm right when I say that, am I not?
Correct.
And that said, Mr. Chair, I wish we had that opportunity, that option. But more to the point, I'm ready to make a motion when you're ready to receive it.
Okay, thank you very much. Before we get to that, Ms. Harlan, is there anything you'd like to add?
Thank you. I would just like to add that yes, I am getting a good education on all this. I will be doing some more research on the OARs and the ORSs as far as being a board member. I truly did. I did, when I called in, I was calling in about a different matter. And while I was on the phone, I asked the question about if my fiance applied. And honestly, it didn't even dawn on me to say, oh, by the way, we're in the same household. I know it's no excuse for not knowing the ORS and the OAR, but that's just where I was at the time. So in proceeding forward with the interviews, I did not realize that I was in the wrong. So, but I appreciate you all, listening to my case and begging for forgiveness.
Thank you very much, Ms. Harlan. We really appreciate it. Any questions for Ms. Harlan before we proceed? All right, hearing none. I would just chime in as well that when I first read this report and I read ORS 244173A and then 3B, I actually had to read both of those provisions a couple of times because A says, oh, yes, you can do this as long as they're an unpaid volunteer, that's no problem. I was like, oh, okay. And then I went to B and it says, oh, but it cannot be to a unpaid member of the governing body. And so those distinctions, I mean, I've been on the commission for years and I had to go back and wait a minute, what? And reread it and, oh, okay, I understand there's a very, very fine line there. And I think that with all these public officials, particularly when they reach out to the commission, they're looking to do the right thing, they're trying to get the best advice, as we discussed, with some imperfect information perhaps. I will be very much inclined to dismiss this, just in light of the fact that I think this was a good faith effort to try to comply that just technically didn't quite meet the mark.
Mr. Chair, I will move that the commission dismiss the complaint against Ms. Carol Harlan, item 23, on our December 18th executive session agenda.
All right, it is so moved for dismissal. Any discussion on the motion? Okay, hearing none, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Mason?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sortoon?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollister?
Aye.
Commissioner Lindsay?
Aye.
Chair Sosa?
Aye.
Motion passes 9-0.
All right, Ms. Harlan, this matter has been dismissed. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much.
All right, have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
Okay. All right. So then we will circle back to the top of the executive session agenda, item number 15, Jeff Henderson.
Chair,
yes.
In a previous role, I served as state director for Working Families Party, and Jeff Anderson was co-chair of the party, and it had a relationship that helped direct my work. So, in an abundance of caution, I'm going to excuse myself from this case, and I would just ask staff to text me when it's over so I can return. So I'm going to virtually leave the room.
Thank you, Commissioner Edwards. We appreciate that. Staff report, please.
Chair Sosa, commissioners. Item 15 is a preliminary review report for Jeff Anderson, Secretary Treasurer and a lobbyist for the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. The complaint asserted, based on statements reported in a Northwest Labor Press article, that Jeff Anderson may have violated ORS 171.756 subsection 2, which prohibits attempts to influence legislators' votes by promising financial support or threatening financial opposition to a candidate's future election. The article reported that the UFCW was asking legislators to sign on to a letter supporting a workers' comp COVID presumption. statements in the article suggested that legislators who didn't sign should not expect future support for their reelection, and that the UFCW might instead redirect political campaign resources to fund legal help for workers. The report in your meeting books recommends dismissal. First, the article's reporter has indicated that the suggestion about withdrawing support was the reporter's paraphrase, and there was no quid pro quo arrangement expressed by Jeff Anderson. Second, there was no vote upon which the legislators could act. There was no bill, and there was no promise of financial support or threat of financial opposition. Based on the information available in the preliminary review, we do recommend dismissal.
Thank you very much, Ms. Myers. Any questions for staff? All right, any discussion on the matter?
Mr. Chair, this is Commissioner Fiskum with a quick comment. I think our staff has done a good job of summarizing this issue for us. For what it's worth, I am both a former newspaper reporter as well as a state official over the years who was quoted many times, and thus for me what's persuasive here is what appears online, probably on page 65, lines 17 and 18. From Mr. McIntosh, I believe his name is, when I wrote that legislators, quote, shouldn't expect any support for their reelection, unquote, that was my own analysis, not a direct quote from Mr. Anderson. On that basis, Mr. Chair, with that key piece of information, I prepare to make a motion.
Okay, go ahead.
I move that we dismiss the matter involving the complaint against Mr. Jeff Anderson, Item 15 on our December 18th executive session agenda.
So moved. Any discussion on the motion? Roll call vote.
Oh, Commissioner Hollister?
Aye.
Commissioner Lindsay?
Aye.
Commissioner Mason?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sortoon?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Chair Sosa?
Aye.
Motion passes 8-0.
With one abstention.
With one abstention, I'm sorry.
Okay, if we can just let Commissioner Edwards know that this matter is concluded, get her back on the line.
She's going to be bringing up new gene pollution, girl.
It's me, I know. It's me. Probably should be back.
Ms. Sherwood, are you back with us?
Yes.
Very good. All right, so let's proceed on then. Items 18 through 22 are all dealing with the Selous Rural Fire Protection District. But let's begin with staff report on item 18.
Thank you. Chair Sosa, Commissioners, good morning. My name for the record is Lisa Kristen. I'm an investigator with the Oregon Government Ethics Commission. Before you are the matters, as you noted, Chair, the Reggie Butler 20-223 XLC, Ron Hervey 20-224 XLC, Dixie Morford 20-225 XLC, Rick Olson 20-226 XLC, and Patty Scouge 20-227 XLC. They are all members, as you noted, of the Selous Rural Fire Protection District Board of Directors. This was arose from a complaint filed by Rebecca Hooper, a former employee of the Selous Rural Fire Protection District. which alleged in relevant part that the members of the Board of Directors may have participated in executive sessions in which matters not authorized under ORS 192.660 were discussed. The complaint specifically concerns three executive sessions held on July 30th, September 18th, and October 15th, 2020, during which the employment of suspended Fire Chief Glenn Floor was discussed. Although ORS 192.660-2I was cited as the apparent proper basis for the discussion of the former chief's employment-related performance with proper notice provided to Mr. Floor for the August 18th meeting, executive session, the sole basis provided for the meetings held on July 30th and October 15th was ORS 192.660-2F, which permits executive sessions to consider information and records that are exempt from public inspection. Although counsel for the special district was present at each meeting, there was little information about what exempt information was discussed, as the employment contract of former Chief Fleur is a public record. If the commission were to move this matter to investigation, commission staff would seek to clarify what exactly the board discussed and reviewed during the executive sessions on July 30th and October 15th, 2020, and determine whether those matters were authorized for discussion under ORS 192.660-2F. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for staff?
Mr. Chair, this is Commissioner Fiskum. A quick question. Ms. Kristen, you might have said this in your report, so I will apologize when I ask you to provide for me at least some context on with regard to Mr. Butler's letter to us on page 113, where he cites the fact that their legal counsel was present at all times and was providing, in theory, provided advice throughout the meetings. What effect does that have on this issue, if any?
Thank you, Commissioner, and that's an excellent question, and that's basically the heart of this. We are trying to find out exactly what was discussed that was exempt. The information we have currently is that they were discussing the employment contract of the suspended Chief Floor, whose contract was a matter of public record. Whether or not their attorney was discussing simply a matter of public record, the employment contract and provisions under which they could suspend, terminate, otherwise end his contract, are really the heart of this issue, and we just need to obtain that information to find out whether or not there were records and information truly exempt or whether it was just a matter of discussing the contract. To further complicate matters, Mr. Floor unfortunately passed away on September 30th. Because of that, the subsequent meeting, the October 15th meeting, things changed, and rather than discussing the contract, what was being discussed was the appropriate way to move forward to appoint a new fire chief and other, again, matters of public concern that weren't necessarily attorney-client privileged and therefore exempt under the statutes.
Now, the other thing that it does, too, the other thing it does, with that attorney being there, even though the advice is incorrect, the most we can sanction them, if you find them after investigation to be in violation, is a letter of education. So it does also have that effect. So,
thank you for that. Both responses are responsive to my question. I appreciate it. The bottom line for me, and I forget when we've dealt with this before, but the fact that an official legal counsel was present providing advice doesn't insulate by its own self commissioners or council members or whomever, board members, doesn't insulate them, period.
No, it's a statutory mitigating factor for the sanction.
Correct.
Fair point. Thank you.
I
was going to put it in the form of a question, but Executive Director Burson hit the issue I was going to point out, which was that the advice of counsel is a safe harbor. It doesn't allow, it doesn't take away a potential finding of a violation, but it does mitigate the penalty by providing that we can't, you know, fine the individuals if they were acting on the advice of counsel. So I just want to make sure that was going to be part of the investigation should we move this forward for an investigation, that would have been one of the facts that would have been sought out by the investigator, and it sounds like it will be. So thank you.
Commissioner Hollister.
Thank you, Chair Sosa. So this might be just another newbie question, so please bear with me if it is. But when I look at ORS 192.660-2F, it seems broader than just materials that are attorney-client privileged. can, and it seems to include, you know, any exempt materials. And I guess I'm looking at the note in, or the exemption ORS 192.345. Sub 12 for a personal discipline action, and so I guess I'm just trying to think through whether is the privilege the only exemption that they were relying on in those sections in those executive sessions that were not noticed as you know in another way. I mean, I guess I'm just wondering, is this a situation where maybe two exemptions could have applied? So I'm just confused about that. Could you help me with that?
Yeah, sure. And again, that's a good question. That also forms part of the basis of our analysis of this case. Was you're correct. At the one meeting, they did cite both attorney-client exemption, if you will, which they professed was the attorney-client matters, information and materials. But they also cited whether or not they were reviewing employment-related performance. Had they done that at all three, I would probably be asking for a dismissal at this point. They didn't. They cited both of those statutes, both of those exemptions or applications, if you will, of 660 at one meeting only. The other two meetings, the meetings at issue and that I've recommended moving to investigation, July 30th and October 15th of 2020, the only citation was to matters exempt from public disclosure. Given that the response we have and the information we gathered indicated that what was being discussed was the employment of the public official, Chief Fleur, there wasn't a basis of anything that we could see that was exempt from public disclosure. Had they cited employment-related performance, any of the other applicable statutes regarding employment of public officials, again, I'd probably be recommending dismissal of regarding all three executive sessions.
Okay. That. Thank you for that. I appreciate the clarification. And so it sounds like it's the commission's position that when an agency cites that sub 2F, they also need to cite the related public records exemption. And if they don't cite the right one, then it's not accurate, or is it just in this instance they didn't even claim there was another one?
No.
Another public records exemption.
No, I think what we're saying is when they're talking about employment contracts, those are not exempt records. So those are actually public records.
Correct.
You can't talk about salary or hiring or benefits. You have to do that in a public session. So they had claimed it's exempt records, but we're claiming that those records were not exempt. Now, if they were actually calling about hiring somebody, you can do that underneath, what is it, I? But but still, you can't talk about salary and things like that. So.
And I think, you know, Director Bush, I think where I'm caught up is it talks about they're ending his employment, which sounds like discipline to me. So I think that's where my mind went.
Yeah, that should be, what is it, H?
Exception.
Yeah.
And so maybe I just, you know, I got caught up with the shiny object.
Yeah, I mean, they probably should have done H, but I mean, in the end of this, they had an attorney there the whole time. If we do, at the end of investigation, find that there's a violation, I mean, this is a great opportunity for that education. And we may end up not only just doing a letter of education, but we may actually ask this group to take a class on executive session from our trainers. Because it does matter which letter you use, which exemption you go in for. And you can't kind of like, oh, I'm in for one, but I'm going to meld over into another. So, you know, if you think it's more than one, call them both out. But, yeah, I think they were looking to discipline somebody, so they probably should have used H. But anyway.
And again, I guess what I'm confused about is it seems like you could also reference 2F to the extent you were looking at documents that were related to discipline of an employee. Because those materials are conditionally exempt under 192.345, sub 12.
Well, they certainly could be. They could be that. But if you're talking about some type of severance package, that again comes back into salary, which would not be exempt. So if you're just simply, I don't know, somebody loses their job and they want to keep the reason for that loss, secret. They could do that part of it, but they still can't say, okay, for them to leave, we're going to give them 6 months severance, and we're going to give them health benefits, and we're going to, you know, have a payout or whatever. That still has got to be public. So, but we'll be looking at, in the investigation, we'll be looking at the records that they actually did see, and we'll determine if those records are actually exempt underneath F.
Can I weigh in? Just one last fact to present that I think is relevant and bears on this that I did not include in my report, but Mr. Floor, unfortunately, was the respondent in an earlier ethics complaint, and that ethics complaint formed the substance of what was being discussed at most of these executive sessions, and that is public record. So again, that was just another factor. Could they have and should they have used another 660, you know, option for executive session? Possibly. And again, that's why we're asking to move to investigation on those two executive sessions alone, because all that was cited was, you know, basically confidential attorney-client privilege, and we didn't have enough information to suggest that that was what was discussed.
Thank you for your patience with me, everyone.
Good question.
Commissioner Hollister, great questions. Thank you. Commissioner Day.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just as we're continuing the education of ourselves and others, I think the other potential basis for executive session here would have been to meet with the legal counsel to discuss litigation that had been filed or likely to be filed. Generally, a severance agreement suggests that there may be some sort of threat of litigation. And so, you know, I would ask the investigator to explore that as well. And should we move this to an investigation, which I'm reading the tea leaves that we will, that this would be another point of discussion and education as we move forward, both for the legal counsel and for the governing body itself, as to how to put proper topics into the proper exemption and then conduct a proper discussion around this.
Great. Any other questions or comments?
Mr. Chair, when you're ready, I have a motion for your consideration.
Mr. Diskin, go ahead.
The motion is regarding the complaint pertaining to Mr. Reggie Butler from the Siletz Rural Fire Protection District, number 18, on our December 18th executive session agenda. I move that we support or adopt the staff recommendation to investigate possible violations of ORS 192-660.
So moved. Any discussion on the motion? Roll call vote.
Commissioner Hollister?
Aye.
Commissioner Lindsay?
Aye.
Commissioner Mason?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sortoon?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Chair Sosa?
Aye.
Motion passes 9-0.
Item number 19.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the staff recommendation to investigate possible violations of ORS 192.660 involving Mr. Ron Hervey from the Siletz Rural Fire Protection District.
So moved. Any discussion? Roll call vote.
Oh, one moment. Commissioner Edwards.
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum.
Aye.
Commissioner Hollister.
Aye.
Commissioner Lindsay.
Aye.
Commissioner Mason.
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day.
Aye.
Commissioner Sortoon.
Aye.
Commissioner Starr.
Aye.
Chair Sosa.
Aye.
Motion passes 9-0.
Item number 20.
Mr. Chair, I move that we accept the staff recommendation to investigate possible violations of ORS 192.660 involving Dixie Morford from the Siletz Rural Fire Protection District, item 20, on the December 18th executive session agenda.
So moved. Any discussion? Roll call vote.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards? Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollister?
She said aye.
Didn't hear it. Commissioner Lindsay?
Hear my aye.
Yeah, thank you.
Aye.
Okay.
Commissioner Mason?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sortoon?
Aye.
Chair Sosa?
Aye.
Motion passes 9-0.
Item 21.
Mr. Chair, I move that we accept the staff recommendation to investigate possible violations of ORS 192.660 involving Mr. Rick Olson from the Sletz Rural Fire Protection District, item 21 on our December 18th executive session agenda.
So moved. Any discussion? Roll call vote.
Commissioner Sortoon?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollister?
Aye.
Commissioner Lindsay?
Aye.
Commissioner Mason?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Chair Sosa?
Aye.
Motion passes 9-0.
Finally, number 22.
Mr. Chair, I move that we accept the staff recommendation to investigate possible violations of ORS 192.660 involving Patty Scougie, if I'm saying the last name right, from the Sletz Rural Fire Protection District, item 22 on our December 18th executive session agenda.
So moved. Any discussion? Roll call vote.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sortoon?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollister?
Aye.
Commissioner Lindsay?
Aye.
Commissioner Mason?
Aye.
Chair Sosa?
Aye.
Motion passes 9-0.
Okay. And so the last thing in our executive session is the Executive Director Performance Review.
Are we all leaving?
No. No, you don't stay.